Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up on the south side of Chicago, and his dad died when he was 12 of a heart attack. And at age 14, a drunk driver killed his mom. On December 4th, 2005, he lost most of his fingers and suffered third-degree burns on more than 80% of his body when his Humvee hit an IED in Afghanistan, and he was in a coma for 3 months. In 2010, he became the first 100% combat disabled veteran to re-enlist in the military. His name? Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro Jr., and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Crisula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro Jr. Israel, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
We both grew up on the south side of Chicago. Tell us about your mom and your dad and your life as a kid.
I guess I'm average upbringing. You know, my dad worked at this paper mill, and my mom was she was a stylist. And I just remember always, you know, at least on Saturdays when I, you know, there's no school, taking my bike and, you know, taking lunch to my dad. So, you know, I was always with my dad. And just, you know, always being outside with my friends and one of my cousins that lived right next to me, you know, going outside playing baseball, riding our bikes and stuff like that. But pretty an average upbringing, I would say.
You were the oldest of four children. Your dad died of a heart attack at 12. You still, to this day, adore him. What's the biggest thing Dad taught you, Israel?
My dad always, at least what I remember the most of my dad, was not only, you know, him taking me, you know, to soccer games, you know, when he played, but also he always made sure that we celebrated our birthdays. He would always throw these big parties for us. So, you know, really it was family was the most important thing that he taught me to, was always be there for your family.
You lost your mom when you were 14. A drunk driver killed her. What's the biggest thing you learned from mom?
Mom was like, she was like the backbone of the family. You know, I would say she was the hammer. You know, she was the one that was like, all right, you better behave or you're going to get it. Or, God forbid, she says, just wait till your dad gets home. You're like, oh, crap, I'm in trouble. But she was there to stabilize everything, you know, from maintaining us doing sports to, you know, my dad. You know, she was the rock there in the family.
You had a full scholarship, academic scholarship, to the University of Illinois, but then you left college. Why?
Well, my freshman year when I was there in school, my grandfather and I just happened to be home that weekend, ended up getting a stroke. And I wanted to drop out then, and my grandma said, no, keep going. And then my sophomore year, you know, my grandma gets diagnosed with cancer, and, you know, after that, you know, I dropped out after my sophomore year. Because, again, it came back to when my dad passed away, the last words he ever told me was, promise to always take care of your family. And so I live by those words. So, you know, when my grandma got diagnosed with cancer, you know, she was still taking care of my three younger brothers and sisters. So I was like, you know what? It's a sacrifice I'll do to try and help my grandparents.
Why did you decide to join the Air Force, Israel?
Honestly, it was really for a way I can help my grandparents financially. know, yeah, I had a good job because I was 22 when I joined, but I just didn't feel challenged. I felt like I wasn't being pushed. I felt stagnant. And, you know, the commercial did come out, and I was like, huh, why not? And then, again, I saw it as a way that, you know, not only could I help my grandparents financially, but a way to kind of get some of my school back.
We're talking to Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro, Jr. When we come back, we're going to ask him about a day, December 4th, 2005, that totally transformed his life. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula. We're with Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. Israel, let's go back to December 4th, 2005. You're in Afghanistan. What was your mission that day?
That day when I was out, we had already been out there a couple days. But our mission was there's a high-value target that we had to capture or kill, and a supply route that the Taliban was using, and we had to destroy the supply route. But that was our mission when we were out there when the day I got hurt.
What happened, Israel?
We're on our way back, so our team, I was out there with my scout team, and the team was split in two. One team was up on the mountain, and my team, the other half, was on overwatch. And like I said, we had been out there a couple days already, so we're coming back on our way to pick up the team on the mountain, and we cross this creek, and no more than 200 meters after we cross this creek do I feel an intense heat blast on my left side. And I realized, like, holy crap, I just got hit.
And there was water nearby. What did you do?
Well, you know, when I got hit, you know, I had these images flash in front of me of my, kind of like moments in my life. The three ones that I remember mostly are one that me and my wife were finally going to get married by the church after our third attempt. You know, next one was me and her going to Greece to honeymoon. Then the last one was of my son, me teaching him how to play ball. Then something clicked, and I got out of the truck. But when I got out of the truck, I was on fire from head to toe. But like you said, I knew there was that creek behind me. So I turned, run to it, but the flames overtook me, and I collapsed. And I'm thinking there to myself, I was like, I'm going to die here. It's like, I'm going to break my promise to my family that I always come back. I'm going to break my promise to my son that I will never let him grow up without his dad like I did. But most importantly, I'm going to break my promise to my dad, the promise that he said to always take care of your family. But then that's when one of my teammates helped me up, and we both jumped into the creek to extinguish the flames.
You lost most of your fingers. You suffered third-degree burns on more than 80% of your body. And then you were in a coma for 3 months. The doctors never thought you would survive, and they actually skinned you alive. How did Carmen, your wife, handle those 3 months?
You know, it's unbelievable how she did it. You know, Carmen was terrified of blood. And, you know, What's crazy about it is, you know, my wife, before I headed downrange, you know, she had gave me an ultimatum about me getting out after this next enlistment, or we would be over. It was because she was being vindictive. It was because I always said I'll never let my son grow up without his dad. But yet, my boy was going to turn three, and he knew me maybe six months out of his life, so he was growing up without his dad. But luckily, we were able to push that aside, but when I got hurt, my wife was never left alone. My friends from all parts of the world came to me by her side, but not only my side. And, you know, she realized why I couldn't give that up. She saw that we were a family. The military was a family. And, you know, they were there to help her when she had questions. You know, my wife didn't speak very good English, so they gave her a translator. One of my teammates was there to translate. And she was notified 3 different times that I was going to die. And it was never like at 10 o'clock in the morning, 1 in the afternoon. It was like midnight, 3 in the morning, 10 o'clock at night. And she would run, get my son, run to the hospital. And every time she was there, one of my teammates was there with her. So my wife had so much help from my teammates.
In March of 2006, 3 months later, you woke up at Brooke Army Medical Center in Fort Sam Houston, Texas. What were those first couple of days like after you came out of the coma?
Well, you know, I'm not going to, you know, sit here and tell you that, you know, yeah, I didn't have a bad day those first couple of days. Of course, I'm going to have a bad day, you know. You know, I went from a 200-pound musclehead to 115 pounds that couldn't even walk, you know, after being told that I'll still be in the hospital for another year and a half. I may not walk again. I'll be able to rest for the rest of my life. And my military career is pretty much over. So every day, you know, I had them get me up, get me moving, get me stretched, because they should really burn. Your muscles contract, so you got to get stretched. Your skin has to be desensitized, meaning you could rub the feather against my hand, and it felt like you were cutting me with razor blades. So I had to go through all that because I wanted to show not only the world but my son that I was not going to let this beat me. I was going to overcome this. And again, remember those words of my dad, take care of your family. How am I going to take care of my family if I'm going to accept what they tell me and sit in a wheelchair, stare at a window and hate life? I'm not going to do that. So I fought every single day.
In doing research for this show together, I found a picture of you and Carmen, and she's gorgeous. You were a very handsome man, okay? You had Hollywood looks. Tell us about the first time you saw yourself after you got out of the coma.
The first time I saw myself is, I call it my darkest hour. I knew, obviously, I could look at my body. I was like, okay, I don't look the same. And I was like, well, my face, it probably not look the same, but I still think I kind of somewhat look like what I used to. You know, I figured charred eyebrows, you know, missing hair. But when I first saw myself, I was going to the restroom, but I needed help. So my wife was helping me, and my therapist, who I call my guardian angel, were helping me. And we're severely burned. They covered the mirrors because they want to ease you into your transition and what you look like. And as we're walking to the restroom, I slip, and they grab me. And as they grab me, I don't know who grabbed the towel off the mirror, but it comes off, and I see myself, and I break down. And I told them, I told my wife, I told Gary, like, you guys should have let me die. I should have died out there. Why did you let me live? And it wasn't a vanity thing. It wasn't at all. It was like, at the time, I was 30 years old. If I think I'm a monster at the age of 30, what's my 3-year-old son going to think? And my son was everything to me. He was my spirit. He was my spark, my fire that made me drive every single day. And the thought of him being terrified of me crushed me.
Speaking of your therapist, talk to us about the doctors, the nurses, etc., who serve our wounded veterans, Israel.
You know, all those guys are great, man. They're really there. They're not just doing a job. At least my experience, they're at Brooke Army Medical Center, San Antonio. I mean, they're so attentive. They were like, I hated the nighttime. I hated it being in the ICU at nighttime. And there's these two nurses, you know, Kim and Bonnie, that when they work night shifts, they'll come in there, sit there, talk to me, give me ice cubes, you know, like little chips, because I couldn't swallow, so that, you know, just to ease the dryness of my throat. And, you know, keep in mind, when your should really burn, when you're in the ICU, your room is at 98 degrees. You got to come in there covered from head to toe. And for them to just sit there and ease my stress of being here at nighttime was amazing. So, you know, they are wonderful people that truly care to take care of us.
We're talking to Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. When we come back, we're going to ask him about May 2006 and when he leaves the hospital and goes back home. And I'm Jack Crisul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Crisula, and we're with Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. Israel, May 2006, they let you leave the hospital. You walk into the door of your house, and you see your three-year-old son, Israel Jr., for the first time. What was that like?
Oh, you know, first of all, I was so happy that I proved the doctor's wrong when they said I'll still be there for another year and a half, and I couldn't walk in a respirator. And then, you know, like 2 months after that, I left that hospital walking and breathing on my own. And coming home, I was nervous because, you know, when I saw myself for the first time, you know, in my darkest hour, you know, I was scared. But my therapist, Gary, he said, you know, DT, all your son wants is to stay at home. So I was nervous. So I come home, I walk in the door, and I remember seeing my friends, my wife, some of my family there. And I walk in, and I look like a mummy. I'm just wrapped from head to toe. You know, I can see he's reading my face. And my wife calls out to my son, saying, you know, Dad's home. And he comes out running. I hear his little feet, you know, hitting the floor. And he sees me and stops. And like, oh, my God, all that fear comes rushing back in. I was like, he is going to be scared of me. He's going to be terrified of me. But then he just tilts his head to the side, looks at me, and says, Papi. I'm like, yeah, buddy. And comes up and gives me the most amazing hug I've ever had. Probably the most amazing moment I've ever had with him, besides seeing him being born. So, you know, my therapist was right. All my son wanted was his dad back. He didn't care what it looked like. He just knew that was dad, not what he wanted me back.
Israel, on your right forearm, you've got emblazoned, stay strong. And on the left forearm, finish strong. They're emblazoned on those two arms. Why so?
You know, once I started getting stronger, getting better, you know, I started to compete in Paralympic competition. And one of the events that I will compete in is shooting. And because of my disability, I can't load the pellets on my air rifle to shoot. So my son will help me. He will be there. And to kind of zone everything out, one puts earplugs in so I can just concentrate and not be distracted. And while I will do that, my son will sit there and say, and will just whisper, Dad, stay strong. Come on, stay strong, Dad. Finish strong. And I would never hear it until, you know, I would get off the line and my teammates are all back there giggling. And I'm like, what's so funny? And they're like, dude, your son's like a little coach, man. He's just whispering in your ear, stay strong, finish strong. And, you know, I was like, that totally fits what I've gone through, what I've done, how I stay strong because I wanted to finish strong. And I tattooed it on my forearms, you know, something that me and my son will always have.
I would imagine that more than once Carmen says you're crazy, but on February 8th, 2010, you tell her, honey, I'm going to become the first 100% combat disabled veteran to ever, in American history, to ever re-enlist in the military. She had to say, "You're crazy. Why'd you do it?"
You know, people always ask that. They think they can't ponder why I'll continue. Because, you know, people, but tell me, you know, you can make so much money out, you know, with your retirement, disability. You know, now you do public speaking. You can get paid well for that. And I always tell them, you know, it's not about the money. There's a lot of people that make tons of money but hate where they work at. I love my job. I love serving my country. I love being in the Air Force. So why do I want to give that up? You know, I know I couldn't be an operator anymore, but I knew I could teach. I can prepare the next generation of service members to continue. So I wanted to continue to serve because I love my job, truly love my job.
Israel, tell us about our modern-day heroes, the men and women that are serving our country in the military.
You know, all those guys and gals out there, man, they're amazing, you know. Only 1% of the population of the U.S. joins the military. And those guys, and it's all volunteer. We don't have a draft. It's not mandatory. And all those, and for whatever reason why they join, for education, to serve the country, to a lineage of family that's always served. But all of them are, you know, they're amazing. A lot of them give up what they do. Some of them give up, like Pat Tillman, give up an NFL career because of what happened in 9/11. You know, out of honor, out of respect, out of love of country, and those are people that are brothers and sisters. You know, we like to tease each other from different branches, you know, about, oh, you're in the Air Force, oh, you're in the Marines, you're in the Navy, you're in the Army. But when it comes down to it, we're a family, and we're there for each other when we need each other.
Speaking of family, the military camaraderie is unlike anything else. How do you explain that?
The closest I would say that camaraderie comes to is maybe being on a sports team, say like on a football team or a baseball team, a soccer team. You know, when you depend on each other to do their parts, and you're there for each other for the glory, and you're there for the bad. That's the best I can compare to that brotherhood, that love for each other, that you do anything for each other, because there's nothing like it.
Speaking of love for our troops, President George W. Bush has a huge heart for our vets. You've met him. Tell us about him.
You know, President Bush is a great dude. I mean, I know I just called the president a dude. He truly cares for us. I mean, he loved us when he was president. He would come visit us in the hospitals all the time. Anytime he was in Texas, he would come down. Didn't want any reporters, no news. He just wanted to be with his guys. And now, you know, that he's out, you know, he still comes visit the guys. He has bike rides with them. He does all these initiatives with them, because he genuinely cares for his service members, and it shows, and we can see it, we feel it. You know, sometimes, you know, politicians or leaders say things just to, you know, for the moment. He doesn't. He truly means what he does for his love for his men and women in service.
Speaking of love, talk to us about the families of our modern-day heroes, the spouses, the parents, the children, the sacrifice they make.
You know, the families, they're really the forgotten heroes. Sometimes we focus a lot on the service member for his service, his or her service, or if they got wounded, and we forget the families. They're the ones that are left behind if one goes deployed or passes away. They're the ones getting the phone calls if their loved one gets hurt, like my wife did. They're the ones making the decisions if they're in the hospital. And they're the ones receiving, you know, the flag if the loved one's gone. So they are the unsung heroes, the family members, because they go through a lot. And I'm blessed. I'm blessed that God put Carmen in my path, because she stood by my side when I saw a lot of other guys and gals that some of their loved ones didn't. So the ones that stay by her side are still that they're saints, and they should be praised. Because, like I said, they see us at our worst, especially when we get hurt. And they're there for us when we come home.
We're talking to Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro, Jr. In 2017, he was awarded the Pat Tillman Award for service at the 25th Annual ESPYs Awards. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Jack Crisula, this is Anything Is Possible. We're talking to Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. On December 4th, 2005, he lost most of his fingers and suffered third-degree burns on more than 80% of his body when his Humvee hit an IED in Afghanistan, and he was in a coma for 3 months. We've mentioned the name Pat Tillman a couple times. Israel, who is Pat Tillman?
You know, Pat Tillman was a safety for the Arizona Cardinals, the NFL team. When the towers were hit on 9/11, you know, he gave up a lucrative NFL career. And he was an all-pro safety. And he gave all that up to go defend his country. Like players of old, like Ted Williams, you know, Joe DiMaggio, all those guys that did it back during World War II. He felt that calling, just like, you know what, there's something bigger than my football career. And he went off to serve, and he joined the Rangers unit, a hard special ops team to get in. And he went downrange, and, you know, unfortunately, he got killed downrange, Pat Tillman did.
Let's go to July 12th, 2017, the 25th annual ESPN The ESPYs. And that night, they honored Russell Westbrook, Simone Biles, Kevin Durant, Michael Phelps, Sergio Garcia, LeBron, Mike Trout, Usain Bolt, Roger Federer, Serena Williams. And then, during that show, comedian Jon Stewart asks you to come up in front of all those people. And they award you the Pat Tillman Award. What was that moment like?
It's still pretty surreal. I mean, I don't watch award shows except for ESPYs. You know, I'm sorry, people like the Oscars, the Grammys, the Tonys, all that stuff. But I'm a sports guy. So if I'm watching the ESPYs, that's awesome. And I never thought I'd ever win something like that. And ESPYs, holy crap. But when I got caught up and awarded this thing and the honor of Pat, and I knew who Pat was. I followed him. And to receive it, you know, this award named after him for what he did for service was truly honor. And then him being a special ops guy and me being a special ops guy and me winning it was so surreal. You know, I remember starting my speech and then blacking out and not waking up after the speech. I'm like, oh, my God, I hope I didn't swear, which I did end up swearing. But it was so, so cool, you know, because afterwards all those athletes and stars were running to meet me, to talk to me, take pictures with me, telling me that my speech was the most amazing speech they ever heard at the ESPYs. And I'm thinking to myself, my speech? I was like, I think of Stuart Scott, Jimmy V, you know, those guys that gave those amazing speeches and putting my speech up next to theirs. I was like, whoa. I guess that's still so surreal.
When you came up, they gave you a two-minute standing ovation, couple thousand of, you know, all these beautiful people, famous people. You started this speech with, I don't see myself as anything special. I just did what anyone else would do. And you ended it with, I'm just a guy who had a bad day at work. Israel, when you put your head on the pillow that night, what did you think?
I couldn't believe that I won this. Because there's millions, thousands of other service members that do the same thing I did. I was just a lucky one that they heard about. And so all I did when I went to bed at night, I was like, I kissed my wife goodnight. I was like, I can't believe this really just happened. And I'll look at my phone tomorrow because I just felt all these texts going through my Apple Watch. And I was like, I still can't believe this happened to me, Carmen. I was like, all I'm going to do is try and live up to Pat's name and continue to serve as much as I can.
We're talking to Senior Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. Tell us about the Invictus Games, Israel.
The Invictus Games is a competition that Prince Harry put together. He got the idea from the annual DOD Warrior Games, where it's wounded, injured, ill service members competing against each other in Paralympic-style games. So there'll be like a team of Army, team of Air Force, team of Marines. But the Invictus Games, Prince Harry wanted to make it bigger because they will send a contingency of British soldiers to compete at the Warrior Games. So he wanted to make it international. So now it's, international wounded, injured, ill service members competing for their country against other wounded, injured, ill service members at the Invictus Games.
You know, you throw out these names, George W. Bush, you call him a dude, Prince Harry. Did you get it? Did Harry and Meghan invite you to their wedding a couple of years ago?
I was honored, but,
You had a better offer.
It wasn't that. It's like, I try and lay low-key. I'm a low-key guy, and I knew that was going to be a big fiasco, and I know I'm a realist. I know what I look like, and I know people sometimes get drawn towards me, and I don't want to take anything from Prince Harry, because he's a great, great dude. I mean, a genuine guy, and so, I appreciated it, but I was like, sir, I just, I think I'll just stay home.
When you die someday and you meet St. Peter, are you going to call him a dude, too?
If I meet St. Peter, I'll probably give him a big old monkey hug, jump on him and hug him. It's like, thank you for letting me in. People like to say, it's like, man, you may not look the same, but you're the same person inside. You joke, you play around, you don't let things get to you, and even though, you've gotten to meet, celebrities, president, royalty, and, you know them well, you don't let that get to you, you don't let it get to your head. And why I tell most people the reason I don't let that get to my head is because I have a wife that says, hey, come back to Earth, buddy. I was like, don't think you're too high up there now.
Take that garbage out and clean those dishes, Phil.
Exactly.
Someday, St. Peter's going to say to you, well done, good and faithful servant. I know it's going to happen. And I believe your dad's going to be at those pearly gates. What are you going to say to him? What are you going to do?
I just want him, hopefully he'll be able to say, if I made him proud that I was able to live up to those last words he told me. So, that's all I want. That's everything I do, that's all I really want to do it, to try and make my dad proud of me.
If there is a veteran tonight or someone listening who just has been burned badly or a stroke and is really feeling down tonight, what do you say to him, Israel?
I tell him, you know, I know it sucks right now. I know you feel like, man, what are you going to do? Because I felt the same way. But you can't let that beat you. You got to find your spark, your fire inside of you. Because everyone has it. Everyone has something that ignites them. You know, mine was my son. You know, he drove me, he pushed me, because I wanted to show my son I was going to beat this. And everyone has something. Either it could be doing it for your dad, or someone telling you you can never do it. You know, but you find that spark inside of you and light it and make it drive you. And keep a positive mind, because your mind's so powerful. It really is. And inside your head, you're telling yourself, I'm not going to let this beat me. It won't beat you. But if you're having thoughts, it's going to beat you. And you know, and if you are having a hard time and you need someone to talk, because no one can do it by themselves. No one can. You need help. You can always reach out to me by social media or whatever. You want to sit down and talk, I'll help you talk. Because sometimes that's what you need. Is someone to help you find that drive to keep you going, because man, the world's a beautiful thing out there. There's so much life out there. And why give it up? Why let something that may be a little obstacle right now stop you from enjoying it? Because I'm living proof, man. I'm enjoying my life. I'm seeing my son grow up, seeing him drive, about to go to college, you know, in 2 years. You know, grow old with my wife. Even though, you know, I keep teasing her that she's getting too old and I might have to replace her. But, you know, it's so much stuff to do out there. So don't give up. Never quit. You know, stay strong and finish strong, man.
Israel Del Toro, I take my hat off to you. Even though you're a White Sox fan, I still the world love you. You're a shining example of letting go and letting God use you to be his arms and legs. Keep up the great, great work.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you for having me. It's been such a pleasure.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall.
Believe in yourself.